Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to episode 29 of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name is Dennis Hurley, deputising for regular presenter Jay. And today we have with us Doug Beerton from Classic Football Shirts. Hi, Doug.
Hello. Hello. How are you doing?
Not bad. Now, welcome to the podcast. I suppose the main thrust of today's discussion is the Fabric of Football event, the second Fabric of Football event upcoming in London soon. But we will hopefully explore a wide range of football shirt-related topics. So maybe
happy to chat with you about anything.
Excellent, excellent. Things mustn't be too busy at Classic Football Shirts if you're able to give up your Wednesday morning.
Well, no, I think you may get a knock on the door in the background soon, but yes.
Why don't we start with... The Fabric of Football event. So there's one coming up in London, having had the original one in March in Manchester, I believe.
That's great. Yeah. So we had at March at the National Football Museum. We had like a special evening, which was hosted by James Richardson. We had Ruud Gullit there, Yari Litmanen, Juan Mata. It was incredible, really. Something we could have only dreamed about back when we started the business in 2006, to have names like that coming and having a chat about football shirts. And we had a few hundred guests there as well.
Yeah.
And then on the Sunday, we opened it up to the general public. Unfortunately, it happened to be Mother's Day on that day as well, which was not something that we realised when we had that date in the diary.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was... an oversight, to say the least. But we still managed to get 2,500 people down to the National Football Museum.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody had a great time. And we thought, yeah, this is something that we want to do more of. We've got so many incredible shirts on the books. It's just a shame for them to be just sat in a dusty old warehouse in Manchester, not getting the appreciation that they deserve. So,
yeah, I get it. So if we can, I was just going to say, if we can kind of, you know, bring in an internet meme and just go kind of you at the Fabric of Football and then go freeze frame, that's me, and you're probably wondering how I got here. How does a small backroom operation go from the humble beginnings to where it is now? How did it actually start?
It started in the summer of 2006, myself and Matthew Dale, students at Manchester University, just messing about really, trying to make a bit of money on the side, avoid doing exams and then ultimately avoid getting a real job. Thought, you know, there was a gap in the market really for original football shirts. I desperately wanted a Germany 1990 home shirt to wear around uni to wind people up and to stand out a bit. Realised that there wasn't really anywhere online that you could get one, and thought, well, you know, if I want one, sure, plenty of other people around the world wouldn't mind one as well. And we thought, yeah, why not? Let's give it a go. We're only young, and we got another student house, completely filled it with football shirts. After the first year, thought, yeah, this is starting to take off. So moved into a bigger student house, filled that with football shirts, and yeah, after that we were quite confident that we were onto something. So we moved to an office in the centre of Manchester, and it just continued to grow really. We were at that time it was just classic football shirts, and by that I mean original, authentic football shirts for clubs and countries around the world, most of which being second hand. And because You know, that they're rare. It means that the supply is quite difficult, and therefore they end up quite pricey. So we were getting people saying, "Look, you know, love your website, love what you're doing, but you know, I'm a student myself, can't afford to spend 100 quid on a shirt." So we thought, right, we need something else. So we started the clearance section, and we started contacting clubs and manufacturers around the world. And getting like old kits basically in bulk. Palermo 07 Ohm shirt was one that really started that. The pink Palermo shirts from 2007, 2008, were able to sell them for $12.99 and
okay.
Sold a lot. And yeah, it just that continued to grow. And yeah, by 2011, when we were getting articulated lorries arriving on Deansgate, which is just the busiest road in Manchester, and we were handballing cardboard boxes up past solicitors. It was time to get our own place. So yeah, we got a warehouse up near the Etihad, and we've been here ever since.
Okay, start, how would you have sourced shirts? What was it, basically through eBay and things like that? How did you build up the stock in the very early days?
Back in the day, while we were students, yeah, very much off eBay, and then charity shops in and around Manchester picked up some. I once got an England 90 away in long sleeve from Withington for about £4. So that was pretty nice. But then obviously as the website itself grew, you know, we offered the option to sell your shirts through that as well, and you know that took off, and we started to get as many requests to sell shirts as we did to buy shirts. So it started to become a way that we could grow our stock. But yeah, I mean, we saw shirts from all around the world. Anywhere the shirts being traded or being available were there.
Okay, and would yourself and Matthew have been interested in football shirts when you were younger?
Oh yeah, growing up, I was obsessed with anything to do with football. The Italian 90 got me into it. Had the VHS, watched the highlights video just so many times, burnt it out by the end of the decade, had to buy it again. called my brother Gary after Gary Lineker when he was born in 91. I was obsessed with anything really to do with football. I'd got my first shirt when I was 6, which was a Man United 90 home. Had a full kit Newton Heath with Giggs 11 on the back. But yeah, I was the type of person who wanted to turn up to football practice in something a bit different. So I used to paint my boots white. Used to wear short shorts. And loved Italian football. Football Italia. Desperate to have like a Napoli Mars shirt. Desperate to have Germany 90. When I moved to uni, you get your student loan, don't you? And you first time in your life, you've got a bit of disposable income, even though it's not really disposable income for that. And yeah, started to actually dabble a bit in a collection and buying a few bits and pieces. And yeah, Argentina and Italian teams, that was my passion really. So
okay.
picked up a few, and yeah, by the time me and Matt started talking about business, we had probably had about 50 shirts between us really, back in like April, May of 2006.
Okay, and would you still have the bulk of that collection, or at the start were you kind of having to sell parts of your own collection?
We had to sell it all. We didn't keep anything back then. It was everything went into the business, and for the best part of 10 years really, every single shirt that we ever got went straight onto the website. I thought it was my job to help others build their collection rather than build a collection myself. And through gritted teeth on occasions. I mean, we had I always said there's one shirt I'd never sell, which was an Argentina away shirt from the 1990 World Cup final.
Oh, yeah, the really deep blue one.
Yeah, but we got it. I wore it for a day and then went, you know what, let's move it on. And yeah, I regret that now. But but then that over the last 18 months or so, sort of the summer of 2016, we started to get a lot of shirts directly from players, and that really opened up just a world of incredibleness for football shirts. You know, shirts you'd only ever seen on pictures and sort of dreamt about.
Yeah,
were now becoming like, oh, we've got one. Yeah, they were starting to become a reality.
Yeah,
and yeah, we. Again, for the first 6 months or so, we just sold them all, everything we got. But then as it continued, we were like, we need to do something with these, really. These are worthy of being in a museum. This is bigger than just a website. This is bigger than just a shop. The general public needs to see these. You know, when you're getting shirts worn in World Cup finals, Champions League finals, as I say, it's just shirts you've only ever dreamt about. So we thought, right, well, we contacted the National Football Museum, you know, had a few chats with them and started to build the collection, really. You know, Holland 88s worn at the, you know, worn by, who do you got? Frank Rijkaard and Ronald Koeman's from the England and Ireland games.
Okay.
You know, getting, yeah, an actual match worn Germany 1990, you know, Man United shirt from the 99 final. You know, this is something we need to pursue.
Yeah.
So we let that grow for about a year or so, and then thought, right, we're actually ready to do it. And yeah, we agreed with the National Football Museum that we'd have a permanent exhibition in there, which starts in April this year, and then to launch that, we'd have a party, basically, and that party turned into Fabric of Football. It turned into, well, yeah, we need to have a proper exhibition. The museum was only a relatively small space that we were allowed to have for a permanent display.
Yeah,
and as you know, as a football shirt collector and enthusiast, it's just impossible to whittle something down to like six shirts. You know, it's impossible to whittle Fabric of Football down to 500 shirts. So
yeah,
wanted something bigger, and wanted something that wasn't just in Manchester. It could be in London. It could be in New York. It could be in Jakarta. You know, all the popular, you know, where our customers are, where our fans are, that's where we need to be able to take the shirts. So we thought, yeah, let's turn it into sort of like a mobile museum, really, traveling museum. And yeah, I spent a lot of time sort of curating it, making it something that could flow and tell a story rather than just, you know, here's 500 shirts, enjoy. Something that talked you through like the development of football shirts, you know, how they've progressed, how the branding's progressed, how the technology's progressed, how all the little features have developed, and, you know, UEFA regulations, FIFA regulations,
yeah,
all that stuff, you know, to go alongside, oh, that's a nice shirt. Because, I mean, I love looking at football shirts, but I love the little stories about them. I love, like, the 1986 Argentina away shirt, that story's just, you know, it's a great story, and people need to know that and need to, you know, to appreciate it, and then to be able to see it in the flesh as well. You know, that's a dream, really.
Yeah, yeah. And if you had to kind of look back over the last 12 years or so, are there any few shirts, we'll say, that you could look at and pinpoint and say, you know, they really kind of brought you to a wider audience? You know, was there any one or two moments that really just helped the whole brand to mushroom?
As I touched on before, the clearance section, and then, like, say that we did a massive deal with AC Milan in 2010, 2011.
Okay.
For, you know, like 100,000 units. So it gave us this ridiculously big collection of AC Milan kit room stock running from like the early 90s through to 2008, 2009. And that really helped us grow our customer base in the Far East, because AC Milan are massive over there. And we had just such a massive volume of shirts for all the collectors over there, you know, shirts that had previously been sort of a 200 plus pound mega rare Form Ocean long sleeve away shirt we were able to sell for under 50 quid.
Okay.
And that really helped us to get a lot of fans, and that player issue market really started to develop for us after that moment.
Okay.
Then in recent years, you know, we've done partnership with Sheffield FC, world's oldest club.
Yeah.
That was something that we really wanted to do, and I think that's helped us with that, to grow a bit more in the UK, to become a bit more mainstream, you know, to do things like sponsor Football Manager, be a partner with them. I mean, that was a dream for me as someone who grew up playing that game just far too much. I think things like that have helped us to become more mainstream, and I think Fabric of Football will hopefully continue that as we go forward, really.
Yeah, and when you mentioned getting in touch with clubs and kind of picking up their old stock, was that just a case of emailing them on spec, or, you know, how did you get in touch, and like, was the response generally positive, or would you have clubs who would kind of think, oh my god, if these guys want to sell our old shirts, why don't we do it ourselves and kind of keep all the...
I mean, we had a lot of different experiences, but overall the it was well received, really. It wasn't. We actually had a guy working for us who did it. He deserves some of the credit. He's an Italian guy called Ettore. He did a lot of the hard work in the early years of contacting people,
okay,
especially in Italy, and doing the deals over there to find the stock and to manage to get it over to Manchester. I think we provide a good service, Classic Football Shirts, to both the customers and to people who want to sell their shirts, because we've got a good customer base, we're able to just take a lot of stock, and that, you know, if the we're never afraid of rolling our sleeves up and buying thousands of units of stock, and you know, we're confident that in time everything will sell, because that's the great thing with football shirts, is that time passes, and things that they go from, oh, it's just last season's shirt, to 10 years fly by, and wow, that's so when we first started, last season's Arsenal kit was the red current shirt from the last season at Highbury.
Yeah.
You now think, wow, that, can you remember when Arsenal had Henry and Bergkamp up front and they played in those red current shirts at Highbury? And it's one of the classic shirts of the Premier League years. So, you know, City winning the league, the Aguero moment, you look at you look at the calendar and you go, oh, that was 7 years ago. Time passes. You know, you get, there's 92 like league clubs in England bring out three shirts a year, times that by all the teams in the world, times that by international teams. How that database of football shirts grows just like exponentially every year.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating, really. And it means that even if you make a bad call and you buy too many of something that doesn't sell in year one, you hope that in 5 years' time it'll mean something more than maybe what it meant at that moment. So you always get another chance with the football shirts.
And how many people do you have working for CFS now?
There's 40 people working here now.
Okay.
Which is, again, quite astonishing. Back about... even only 2 years ago, we had about 25 people working for us, and probably by the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me if we've got 50 people working here.
Yeah.
Especially with the World Cup coming up and fabric of football, and then we're looking to do we'll have a pop-up shop in London as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that we want to do in Manchester and then in other places, is to have a physical shop. So yeah, we need people to help us run those as well. So yeah, I always growing.
And how difficult is it to keep track of all the stock? Like, is there a special kind of computer program, or is it an Excel spreadsheet, or how exactly do you stay on top of it all?
I mean, yes, there's a system behind it all. What you expect of a business in 2018? Everything sits on a database. Everything can be easily accessed, easily monitored, easily reported on if we want to. But yeah, I mean, back when we started, you were cobbling together pieces of paper and, you know, trying to write things on an Excel spreadsheet, and yeah, things were a bit all over the place. But 12 years, you know, we've had to grow, we've had to put money into things that you never wanted to put money into. and that's it. You know, a bedroom operation is just massively different from a 40 people business in the end. And yeah, it's sometimes you just wish you could do it all yourself. And, you know, like we did back in 2006 in the early years, you know, we'd run around, we'd list the shirts on the website, run to the post office, come back and do the accounts, come back and do the marketing, and, you know, work like that. But yeah, you have to delegate. Hard to let go of certain things. I'd love to just be able to do it all myself.
I still work
12 hours a day pretty much, and I'm in the office usually 7 days a week. So, but it's a passion as well as,
of course,
you know, a business and a job. It's more than a job. I mean, it's like a life in football shirts.
When did you realise that it had the potential to be a proper full-time job rather than just, like you say, a hobby to kind of help two students kind of get a bit of money in
college? The first few months of the website were slow. They were very slow. And me and Matt looked at each other a couple of times after, like, there was definitely one time where I think we went about 5 days without a sale, and we're like, is it really going to work, this? You know, we live off like pasta and I can't look at green pesto because it sounds a bit bourgeois that you lived off pesto, but it's pretty cheap if you just get pasta and pesto.
Yeah,
you know, it'll last you a week. So yeah, we still can't look at green pesto. Yeah, but then sort of after Christmas into about the spring of 2007, sales started to be quite good. You know, we were starting to sell, you know, like maybe 20 shirts a day. And then by September, so I think September 2007, we turned over about £20,000 in that month. And that was like, whoa, that's a lot of money. This is something, you know, that's big. We can do something with that. And yeah, it just, from that point on, there's really been no looking back. It's just grown and grown and grown.
And like, if you look on eBay, we'll say, and you're looking at shirts, because obviously for when I'm illustrating shirts for my website, I like to research and kind of see, you know, where trim was and whatever, and, you know, what way the badge might have been. And you'll come across these match worn inverted commas shirts on eBay, and you know, it doesn't take more than a glance really to see that these guys are just chancers. You know, sometimes they might be team wear that has had badges applied. You see a lot of kind of 1980s, oh, look at this prototype Umbro shirt that Arsenal didn't want, and you know it's not.
Yeah.
And then you've other ones that are just made in the Far East and they are absolute fakes, dressed up as the real thing. They'll have the patches and the numbers and everything. And how hard do you have to kind of stay on top of that to make sure that people aren't trying to fob off fake stuff on you dressed up as the real deal?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a massive concern. I mean, we pride ourselves on only selling original, authentic shirts. And Yeah, but it is a hard job. I mean, we the guys who list on the website are just trained for months and months, and even after a year of working here, they're like, you know, we still have to monitor very closely to make sure that they're spotting anything that comes through that's fake. But it's always a minefield. But I mean, it depends on one. It sort of depends on your sources, you know, where you're getting things from. But the good thing for us is just that we handle so many shirts that it makes it quite easy to, you know, by the touch, by the feel of it, you can just generally tell. And normally with football shirts, you know, on somewhere like eBay, if it sounds too good to be true, it will be too good to be true. And just to not, you know, always keep your wits about you when you're collecting things and do your due diligence and make sure you have a look who you're buying from and you've gone back through. And if they've got a few things that are too good to be true, then, you know, come on.
Yeah.
As much as you want that shirt and you've desperately searched for it forever, and this guy's got two of them, you know, you just have to, yeah, not let yourself get carried away, really, and resist the urge. But yeah, for us, it's, I'd like to think it's easier than it sounds, because mainly because we just handle so much stuff and our suppliers are generally very good as well, that we don't have to worry too much. And on the odd occasion something slips through, you know, we've got so many customers online that we'd normally just get an email saying, "Oi, Doug, well, you know, someone's listed this. I don't know. You want to have a double check of it? We'll go and have a double check of it." And, "Oh yeah, sorry, someone that has snuck through. We'll get it off the site and chuck it in the bin, and that'll be that." It's something that you got to certainly be cautious about.
Yeah, and that's probably like a key selling point. Like, if someone says to you, "Oh, I've seen your shirt, you're selling it for more than what I know is a real one on eBay," but you're just able to say to them, like, you provide peace of mind. They know it is genuine, authentic, 100% if they do buy from you.
That's it, yeah. I mean, you get a proper experience. You know, there's more to it than just the shirt. Yeah, there's the service that goes alongside that, and the reliability. I think the customer service is just something that we take massively seriously and have done since day one. I mean, I used to reply to every single email myself, and I still did until about 18 months ago. That was something they had to claw away from me and let other people get involved in, because I was just sat there until 8 o'clock every night just replying to everybody myself. But as with anything, you can find stuff cheaper on Amazon or eBay or, you know, any other sort of marketplace that pops up. The same with a lot of other products, you can do that. But if you want to deal with a reliable company where you know that if you do have a problem, they'll sort it out, then yeah, that's what we are.
And then I suppose kind of another aspect of the football shirt market is the likes of Toffs or Scoredraw, who sell replica classic shirts. How do you see them fitting in?
There's always a market for that. I mean, and I totally respect what those guys do, because, you know, as I sort of said before, I mean, like, the shirts that are just unrealistic to actually get an original one of, you know, replica football shirts as we know them, they didn't really start until the late 70s, so we can't possibly ever really stock at something from the pre-1975, unless it's a match worn shirt that's going to end up being, you know, a lot of money. And even for Scoredraw, you know, who do more modern designs, they're increasingly rare and difficult to find, and so, yeah, like what we'll still sell the Newcastle 93 home shirts that we've got because people there's enough people that want the original.
Yeah.
But there's not so many of them in existence that we could sell 1,000 of them in 6 months anyway. So for that mass market, there's room for that to exist, and to sell a reproduction for 30 quid versus the original for 100 quid.
Yeah,
you
know,
there's people who haven't got the budget who are not that fussed, so why not? Or they might even have an original and just want something that they're willing to risk putting through the wash and willing to get some beer stains on it. So like, yeah, why not? There's definitely for room for both things to exist, and I don't think we tread on each other's toes too much.
And you mentioned like the oldest shirts you'd have. Is it mid-70s? Is kind of the rough starting point for your stock? I suppose before then, a lot of shirts didn't have crests, so even if you came across one, you might be able to verify it.
Yeah, exactly. And if we can't verify it, then I wouldn't really stock it. So, yeah, pretty much 75 onwards. You know, you got to say Man United, when they start with Admiral, is 75. England start 75. You can sort of buy those. Then Umbro, it's more like 78 for your Liverpool, Arsenal, Scotland type of stuff. In general, I say 78 or 75 is like the furthest that we can go back for a replica shirt.
And what is your own favourite shirt of all time?
I'd say I've got... It's sort of an impossible question to answer.
Yeah, I have a feeling it might be.
I'd say Germany 1990... home shirt as just an all-time great, all-time classic. You know, it's timeless. They've brought the design back this summer for the 2018 World Cup, and it's attainable. You know, enough of them exist that you know people can have them in their collections. It's not like some obscure third shirt that was only ever worn in one match and only player versions of it exist. But and on the other hand, I would have to say the Argentina goalkeeper shirt from 1990, the design that Goycochea wore in the final or the semi-final, you know, especially the semi-final. I love the penalty saves, you know, Donadoni and Serena, just the gold chain hanging out over the shirt, just the design, just him in general, his face. And that'd be one I'd just absolutely love to have. And like, it'd be like a shirt that you could retire on.
And have you ever come close to finding one of those Argentina goalkeeper shirts?
Again, like as you sort of touched on before, you can buy one off eBay, you know, like one with probably an applied badge, or you know, it's a template that I think exists.
Yeah.
But I've sort of got into match-worn shirts quite a bit, you know, and to have his actual shirt, that'd be the one if it exists. I mean, in the World Cup, they normally tend to swap after every match.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think Walter Zenger's sat at home with that shirt in a box in his garage maybe, and I could one day meet Walter Zenger, have a coffee with him, and do a deal for Goycochea's shirt. That'd be a lifetime dream, I think.
Yeah, you didn't consider getting in touch with him when he was manager of, was it Watford? He was in.
Yeah, no, I we're always trying to get in touch with people, but not everybody's willing
to
take a call.
It was Wolves he was with actually a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I knew it was one of the W's. The funny thing about that shirt actually is that René Higuita wore it for Colombia as well, but clearly someone made a mistake, and the pattern on his one is upside down compared to Goycochea's.
Yeah. So I mean, don't get me started on Italian 90 goalkeeper shirts is just like one of the great can of worms. I mean, it's there's just so much going on that's different. That's something that you could write. I mean, I've just finished writing the programme for the updated programme for Fabric of Football London.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be an update. It turned into 14,000 words of new stuff.
Okay.
But that's because, you know, I could write 14,000 words on Italian 90 goalkeeper shirts. And, yeah, just exploring, like, the subtle differences and the stuff that's going on is, yeah, that's when you can lose yourself down a wormhole on a Friday night and you resurface again on Sunday night. And yeah,
I presume
that's what I do in my weekends.
Yeah, but it probably helps in a way then when you know that there are subtle differences that can date a shirt to a particular game.
Yeah, certainly it helps. Well, again, with that's it's helped me in writing the Fabric of Football program that we've got so many of the actual original match-worn shirts, because, you know, this stuff online, you know, people have written about shirts. Obviously, you know, yourself, you know, use your website and look at what you've put down, and you know, everybody's contributed to the body of research that goes into football shirts. But yeah, it helps sometimes to have the actual shirt, because you can just look at the, you know, it throws up all the things that don't make sense with what has maybe been written before about them, or
yeah
you can spot something extra that you didn't realize before.
Yeah, what I often find is that someone will write something about a shirt and it'll be taken as gospel by everyone else, and it might actually be a slightly incorrect, but this piece of info becomes just taken for granted.
That becomes the thing, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, like say the Che Guevara goalkeeper shirt, you know, Majoria. I was re-researching that. I mean, we've obviously sold many on the website. We had our own notes, but in our notes it said that the match was between Majoria and Rosario Central.
Okay.
It wasn't. It's just been some like crossed wires about Che Guevara being a Rosario Central fan and him being at the match. And the match was actually against a Havana 11 rather than Rosario Central. But, I mean, we've even contributed to spreading that story about it being Rosario Central ourselves by that going into our notes. But, yeah, you see it a lot. You know, it's especially... Yeah, the first thing that gets written, that tends to be the one that sticks, and then it takes something else to be found out, and then, but even so, the mainstream will probably always know it as what went first.
Yeah, of course. And the CFS social media channels have proven very, very popular. Like, you seem to have made a big push. On Twitter, you know, you'll post like a picture of a shirt with a stash and invite suggestions for people's favourite stash shirts, and it really kind of generates engagement. And the videos on YouTube then as well have really kind of set a high bar, because it'll be yourself or one of the other guys going through top five, whatever, and kind of giving the story of the shirt as well. And like you said earlier, it really adds extra meat to the bone rather than just saying, oh, this is, you know, an Italy 1982 shirt. They won the World Cup. Please buy it. You know, it really adds depth to the whole thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as for the social media, I mean, it's not myself that runs that. Obviously, it's run in-house, and we take it very seriously because we want to engage with the customers. We want to engage with you know, football fans and collectors out there, and we want it to be as interesting as possible, you know, to rather than just sort of regurgitate what other people may be saying, to create new content and to create stuff that's makes people think. I mean, I love watching or following the stuff on Twitter where people are, say if we put up a design like, you know, or who wore the bruised banana, and I love seeing people contribute to that, and like, you know, you see people, shirts that you'd never seen before, you know, like, I don't know, Slovan Bratislava, and, you know, oh yeah, I didn't realise that Racing Club wore the Holland 88 design. Yeah, I love seeing that type of stuff myself. But then I love, as I say, researching football shirts and researching them as thoroughly as possible and finding some quirk on it that I didn't know myself. Like, say, the Italia 90 shirt that you mentioned, you know, the version worn at Italia 90 had the flag on the collar and cuffs the different way around
to how it
had been worn previously. And, like, why was that? And, you know, that's something I'd like to take further as well. Is, say, at Fabric Football Manchester, we had Inna Fransman, the designer of the Germany 1990 shirt. And I was able to discuss with her, you know, where did that design come from, and, you know, try and understand, you know, a bit more. So I'm doing the legwork of finding out how many times it was worn, finding out all the variations of it. But then it's something I'd like to do further, is to talk to the designer of it, or, you know, someone who was working there at the time, and find out even more about it, like, where did that come from? And Inna said that came from the CEO of Adidas at the time, just basically went in and said, right, we're hosting Euro 88, put a flag on the shirt, and that's what they did. They played around with a few designs. Inna Fransman's was the one that made the cut, and that was it. That became the, you know, the what is often said, the best football shirt of all time. The origins of the classics. And so for that Italy shirt with the collar the other way around, like, I'd love to get to the bottom of why that actually happened. Like, what did someone upload the artwork in the wrong way, and and the collar, the flag came out the other way, or was there some design meaning behind it? Then you've squeezed everything you could possibly squeeze out of a football shirt, and you know, you fully understand it there.
Yeah,
and also to find the people responsible for designing, you know, the things that we would call the all time greatest shirts. You know, who designed? Well, again, spoke to Inna about the Holland 88, that geometric design. Where did that come from? That, you know, apparently there's no one person who can put the finger on who actually designed that. That was more of a team thing. But then there's other designs from the past that were designed by a single person, and to track that person down and to have a chat with them would be brilliant.
And it's great for you then that you are in such a position, that it kind of gives you a platform that you get to meet all these people and the designers of the shirts, and you've got to meet a lot of players then as well, and go through their shirt career, as it were. Like, I remember watching the Michael Bridges video on YouTube. It's great when for us kit nerds to see a player who has such an interest in the kits.
Yeah, I mean, Michael arranged that himself. He was an absolute hero. I mean, he works over in Australia.
Yeah.
He contacted us and said, you know, I want to come to visit. I'm over in the UK. I want to visit your warehouse. He came in, then he brought Mark Schwarzer with him, and they filmed a piece for Optus Sport. And then, yeah, I said, look, you know, do you mind if I have an interview with you? And he was obviously massively enthusiastic about doing it. He loved football shirts as much as we do, and yeah, he could have happily talked about them all day. But yeah, I guess that then completes the full circle of it. If you're able to, you know, do, I'd say, like, the fact checking of something, work out how many times it was worn, work out the variations, work out any subtle details that occur in a shirt, the differences between the player shirt, the replica shirt, all that type of thing. Talk to the designer, find out where the design came from, what it was all about, and then you talk to the player who actually wore that design and what he felt about it and how his special moments wearing it. That's a dream. You've completed everything to do with it then.
And without giving away kind of any personal details of anyone, now, has it ever happened that an order has come in online or whatever, and you see the name of the person who's ordered it, and it's someone really famous, and you think, wow, I never knew they were interested in football kits?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's hard to say without giving names away, but yeah, certainly. I mean, you'd probably be surprised at some of the people who are interested in it, and it's great. You know, I think it, when I see that, I'm like, yes, that legendary status is like confirmed then if they buy a shirt that. Or you go, oh, I didn't realise he supported them. But then maybe they're buying it for as a gift for somebody.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
yeah, it's yeah, it's interesting to see, and I do like to follow, you know, who people support and what they're interested in. But I mean, I look through the orders very carefully, and I love to see what people are, you know, what people are buying, and people still starting a collection, to get in touch with them and sort of see what it is they want to buy, what, you know, what's their interest, because we've got a massive backlog of stock to process at ZFS. I mean, we're sat on just so much stuff that
yeah
sometimes we can it's easier if we know what people want, and then we can maybe offer a more personal service. But that's, it's difficult because obviously we've got a lot of customers and a lot of shirts.
Of course,
so,
yeah. But yeah. It's not a bad complaint. And James Richardson presented the Fabric of Football in Manchester. Is he deeply interested in shirts, or was it kind of, you know, because you associate him with the classic Italian shirts of the 90s, or how did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, James Richardson was just an absolute. He lived up, you know, when you say never meet your heroes,
yeah.
But do meet James Richardson, because he is really nice man, and he came just. He outdid me, to be fair. I said to him, you know, I sent him some bump about football shirts and said, you know, we're going to interview Ruud Gullit, maybe have a look at this, maybe have a look at that. But he came in just so prepared. He'd really done his homework, and he really knew extra stuff about football shirts, you know. So he asked Ina Fransman a question about the, you know, was there some meaning behind the way the flag pattern goes up and down, you know, to, and how that compares with Germany's World Cup performance.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, like, I hadn't told him to say that. You know, that's something he'd done himself. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I had a great chat with him about Italian football and Football Italia, and, you know, finding out who his favourite players were and what he was interested in. You know, like he said, Roberto Mancini was his favourite player, or best hair anyway. Roberto Baggio, you know, but yeah, he's definitely as passionate about it as you'd want him to be. You know, he's not just like he leaves the studio and yeah, he's not interested in football. He's definitely interested in everything that you'd want him to be interested in. And yeah, that was incredible to have James Richardson there. Yeah, I can't thank him enough for getting involved with it.
And will he be presenting the London show, or is it
no, the else? London show is going to be a bit different in that it's just going to be 4 public days,
right.
4 days of like full access to everything for the general public, and not with like a glitz and glamour evening. But that's not to say that there won't be some players dropping in every now and then, because it's in a partnership with the Bobby Moore Fund and Cancer Research. So there'll be people coming in as part of the charity Football Shirt Friday as well. So yeah, we're hoping that on both Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that if you come down, you might well get the chance to see somebody, but I don't even know when they're going to be there exactly myself. I'll be as surprised as anybody else. But yeah, they'll that's certainly it. And then we'll probably do like a special thing with like a panel and you know, a presenter again in the future. But for this one, it's just very much, let's get as many people there as possible, and let's make it as inclusive as possible, and yeah, just focus on football shirts and yeah.
That's okay, it. And when does it take place?
Oh, yeah, it's on the 26th of April to 29th of April at 133 Bethnal Green Road in London, in Shoreditch. We've also got the pop-up shop, which is about a 5-minute walk around the block on 30 Cheshire Street.
Okay.
And, yeah, they'll be open from 11 a.m. through till about 8 p.m.
And is the pop-up shop just for the duration of the exhibition?
The pop-up shop actually will be open from Monday the 23rd through to the Sunday evening.
Okay.
So that's actually open for the 6 full days. So, yeah, that'll run nicely alongside out.
And there are plans then, like you said earlier, for permanent retail areas?
Yeah, we're going to see how it goes. I mean, there's going to be... We're probably trying a bit too much, really, but we're trying to give the best of classic football shirts in this shop. So it's going to have a mixture of the classics, but then also the clearance stuff. So there'll be a mixture of, you know, you can get last season's Leicester shirt for 15 quid, but then there'll also be... all the classics that you'd expect to see as well. We've got some crazy design shirts as well, like the Loha shirt with the prawns on it. it'll be in there. So I'm hoping to interest a few people. Yeah, I think there'll be people coming to that shop and they'll be in there for an hour and they won't even realise they've been there for an hour. They'll be just... so much stuff to take in, so much stuff to look at. A bit like when you go on the website, really, just breaking off like the journey that you can go on, and you start looking at, you know, you go with the intention of looking at like an AC Milan classic from the Van Basten era, and then via Legia Warsaw shorts and Recreativo Huelva cap, you've arrived at something completely different.
And What are your views on the shirts for the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, massive fan of it. I mean, to bring back the designs of the past is obviously, I mean, that's brilliant. And I've even been buying them up myself as a fan. I can't wait for the World Cup to see them all being worn. I think it's really good, and. You know, obviously Adidas have got a massive pool of all-time classic designs that they can call upon, and then you've got like Nike rivaling that with like bold graphics and you know, like look at that Nigeria shirt. I can't wait to wait to get one of those. And I'm just gutted that it comes out on the 1st of June, but I'm hoping that somebody at Nike is going to do us a favour and let us have one for the exhibition, so we can sneak it in there and get people to be able to see it before it actually comes out.
And do you think it's difficult almost for manufacturers nowadays when there are, like you say, 3 new kits for pretty much every club every season to try and keep reinventing the wheel almost? And you know, you can overdo the looking back then, because when so many shirts are referencing the past, then in 20 years' time, you can't.
In a way, they can't win, the designers, because you create something completely new, and it's too much of a break from tradition, and you know, you'll have people saying, "Oh, I wish they'd have done this. I wish they'd have looked back at something else." But then you do look back, and oh, why are they just looking back? They're not making anything new. I think it is hard. It is hard for them, but I don't mind either way, to be honest. I think that I think you can, obviously, if in 4 years' time the next World Cup is is retro designs, then I think people will start to say, yeah, you're doing the retro designs to death. But I think that's very much like, that's the fashion at the moment, is the 90s and the retro designs is very much like, is in streetwear and fashion. And I think that the obviously Adidas and Nike have really, part of that, and they've made the World Cup kits around that theme. But yeah, I'd be surprised if they're still doing that in 4 years' time. I think they'll have moved on to another design theme. But then in 4 years' time, we'll probably be going, oh, I wish they'd have had a look at, I wish they'd have had a look at the Euro 92, the Euro 92 or the 78. You know, why does nobody ever reference stuff from the 70s anymore? Why are there no collars on football shirts? I'd love to see a collar back. That's one thing I'd say.
Yeah, it does look classy.
I'd love to see a shirt. I'd love to be able to put a collar up on a shirt, a Cantona style. That'd be my one request, but other than that, no. I'm just interested to see where the designs go and where it takes, where it goes next, basically.
I suppose football fans nowadays, it's probably to do with the internet and social media and the way that people talk more to like-minded people and views become very trenchant. Things I've noticed that kind of fans are very much against is the recolouring of crests on away shirts. Even though that's something that's gone on since the beginning of time. And the same with templates. Templates get a fierce bad rap nowadays. And, if the manufacturers are making individual shirts for everyone, they wouldn't have enough time to do it. Like, do people almost get too spoiled by kind of what's out there and still demand more?
I think, some of the greatest designs of all time are templates, aren't they? I mean, in the 80s and early 90s, there's not many bespoke shirts. They're often, mention the Holland 88. It's a template. Other teams wore it. You got Borussia Dortmund, Soviet Union wore it at the same tournament just with a collar. So obviously Germany wore it at Italia 90. I guess the strength of the template comes down to the design itself. People, criticise maybe the Nike 2016 stuff because it's quite simple. It's a simple design. They're just changing the colours of they're literally just changing the colours of the shirt, aren't they? But I mean, I guess they're just changing the colours of the shirt, whatever. But if it's a strong design, then I think you go like, oh, I'd love to see my team in that.
Yeah,
I'd love to see what my team shirt would look like if we had that design. But if it's a weak design, then it does start to get a bit monotonous when everybody's got that same kit. But yeah, in the 90s, 80s and 90s, you had a lot of two-season shirts, didn't you? And even sometimes longer than two-season shirts. I do think that bringing out three new shirts a season, or at least two new shirts a season, is a lot, and it does mean that they have to work hard to be constantly thinking of something new, and for there to become more classics. Because I guess like sometimes a classic it's made by what happens in the shirt. Which players wear it, those special moments. And if it's only worn for 1 year, obviously you can be reducing in like that the chance for something to happen by 50%.
Yeah, exactly. That you can't kind of identify or engage properly with a shirt. Like, I think it was a fairly good system kind of around the late 90s, early noughties, where teams, their home kit would last for 2 years. And then the away would be the away for a season, but the following season it would be the third. So you had a good rotation going, and nowadays you almost can't get used to a shirt before it's time, for the leaks for the following season's ones to appear.
Yeah. And then especially with if the manufacturers change and the sponsor change, there's not so much of a progression of anything. It can just really jump quite quickly from one thing to another, and that there's not like that development of style and design that sort of you got with like how that you got with like Adidas at say Arsenal with Adidas, you know, with JVC as the sponsor. It just sort of seamlessly progressed, and it didn't feel as like as big a break when that new kit came out, because yeah, it was just an update to something that had gone before it. Whereas now, yeah, it's a big. You can often go like, wow, that, you know, they didn't even look like a certain team, because they've gone from wearing the stripes to the a stripe kit with Umbro to just a full red coloured shirt with Kappa, and it just looks completely different. But then I wouldn't ever criticise anything, because it's just it's all interesting to see what happens with, and you know, in some ways the criticism can then end up making something that somebody wants in years to come, when it's like, oh, when I hated that shirt, why did they change the badge, why did they make us play in, you know, that tone of the colour, I don't like it. But then, yeah, I don't know, maybe in 10 years time it becomes a bit of a cult classic, because maybe not as many people bought them at the time because they didn't like them, so it's a bit rarer than it should be. It's a bit rarer than the shirt from around it. So, yeah, time's a great thing with football shirts. You know, there's that instant thing when the kit designs come out in the summer. Or, you know, people got their judgments. People got to say what they want to say about it. The season happens in it. Then there's the moments. There's, you know, there's those stories. And then it's all just put in a pot to sort of brew. Sometimes it bubbles up and becomes a classic almost instantly. Other times they can bubble along and you know, or maybe people aren't that interested. But then, bang, 10 years' time, 20 years' time, just through the age of it then. I mean, you're talking about a 20-year-old shirt. Well, I want a piece of that. It might be from the year that somebody was born, or the first match they ever went to happened to be in that shirt, so it means something to them. And it's, yeah, it sounds a bit cliche, but yeah, every shirt means something to someone else, you know, it means something to them, and it might not necessarily, yeah, just because you don't think it's a classic or I don't think it's a classic doesn't mean that it's not a classic to somebody else and important to them and to their collection or for their personal life.
Yeah, I get you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
And the Sheffield FC link up then, what was that kind of... something that you wanted to kind of being the oldest.
We'd always had, yeah. I mean, we'd always had a passion for. We wanted to sponsor a team. We wanted to have our logo on a shirt. But more than that, we wanted to get involved in the design of a shirt. And yeah, I mean, we start looking through a list of teams, and yeah, Sheffield FC just stands out massively to us, because you know, it's the world's oldest club. I'm from Worksop originally, which is about 15 miles away from Sheffield, and yeah, it's we got in touch with them, and we wanted to help. I mean, they're quite you know, they've done a lot of work themselves. You know, Richard Timms, the chairman's done a lot of work to get them put on the map. But yeah, we just wanted it to be a partnership, really, where we try and get as many people to know about their story as possible.
Okay.
So it's more than just a sponsorship. It's like it's a relationship. It's partnership, and it's like a growth thing, trying to get people involved. But yeah, for the 17-18 season, we're able to design like the lace neck anniversary shirts, and then we've designed some new shirts which will come out for the 18-19 season.
Oh, okay, you've kind of answered my next question, because I was going to ask as to how much input you had into the design of the shirts.
Yeah, I mean, it's for the first year we weren't allowed as much input as we wanted, but then we've been allowed more as we've got into it.
Okay.
You're still restricted a bit. I mean, you're working with a manufacturer, so we haven't been able to like make a completely bespoke shirt in that, like, you know, you're choosing the base shirt, you know, from a catalog, and then you're adding your own, you know, you're sort of accessorizing that with your own personalized design. So we haven't sat down with like a designer and gone like, I want this type of stitching and I want this type of like overlay and this, but we have come up with the graphics for it and the general colorways and things like that. So yeah, I think people will be interested to see what we've come up with for 18-19 anyway, and hopefully they are popular, but we'll see.
Would you kind of notice that in your own sales, that the Sheffield FC shirts are kind of popular to the casual fan because of your association with them?
I think that they'd be popular anyway. I mean, obviously we have shirts for lots of teams on the website, and lots of small teams, lots of obscure teams that people haven't normally heard of. And if people like what they see, if they like the design, if they like the backstory, and more importantly, if they like the price of it, then they'll buy them. And I think that, yeah, even if we weren't involved with Sheffield FC, it wouldn't really matter. If we had Sheffield FC shirts on our website for the price that we have got them on for, like, you know, 20 quid, then people will buy them. But yeah, I think it helps we're able to, you know, to promote each other on social media and to look a bit further into the relationship has helped a lot. And yeah, I'd like to think there's people, yeah, our hardcore fans would buy a shirt because it's got our logo as a sponsor, but I think that it'd be wrong to say that they're only buying stuff because of that.
Yeah.
I think that Sheffield FC has got its own story.
And what are the other kinds of plans for CFS on top of strengthening that partnership with Sheffield FC and, you know, maybe kind of opening shops?
Yeah, I mean, the Sheffield FC, obviously the oldest club in the world, but I want to sponsor more teams would be something that I'd like to get involved in. Maybe look at the oldest clubs in other countries, and to get involved, like they call it the Club of Pioneers, like all the oldest clubs in every country, they come together, and if we try and sponsor as many of those as possible, that would be nice. To have more involvement in design of shirts, to look at like collaborative shirts with other people that we partner with would be nice as well. And then, yeah, just the normal stuff, really, continuing to grow the stock, grow the contacts, grow the offering that we can give to the customers, improving the services, and then Fabric of Football to take that around the world, to especially to like our like, obviously we're from Manchester, but like the where our biggest customer bases are, you know, especially in the Far East, it'd be great to meet all the people that are our best customers. Would be great, and yeah, with the shop, to have something physical locations for people to come and enjoy looking at original football shirts, like whatever day of the week. They don't necessarily have to wait for the next Fabric of Football exhibition. If you want a bit of classic shirt action, just come, just to go to the pop-up shop or the physical or a permanent shop in Manchester, and to be able to browse through the archives and to offer something in that way as well.
Excellent, excellent. It all sounds very interesting and exciting. So I think we can wrap it up there. Obviously, before all those plans for world domination, you have Fabric of Football London to come. So you might just remind us again when that takes place.
Yep. So the pop-up shop, 30 Cheshire Street, London, that's on the 23rd of April until the 29th. And then the exhibition itself is at 133 Bethnal Road, and it starts on the 26th of April and runs to the 29th. If you come down anytime after 11 a.m, you'll be fine. And we'd ask anyone who's coming down to wear a football shirt, especially on Football Shirt Friday, we'd like to turn the whole area into just an extravaganza of people walking around in football shirts and just pack Brick Lane out with football shirts. So if you're coming down, please wear a shirt and come down.
Excellent. And if people want to contact you on social media,
So you can get us on Twitter at Classic Shirts, and then we are Facebook, Classic Football Shirts, Instagram, Classic Football Shirts, YouTube, Classic Football Shirts TV. Come to the website, classicfootballshirts.co.uk, and we will have something for you.
Excellent stuff. Designfootball.com is the website for Design Football, and on Twitter it's at Design Football. My name is Dennis Hurley, and if you want to go to my blog, it's museumofjerseys.com and Twitter at Museum of Jerseys. Doug, thanks so much for your time. I know you're very busy.
It's an absolute pleasure.
It's very much appreciated, and wishing you all the best for the upcoming exhibition and into the future. Hopefully, I'll be talking to you again.
Yep, hope so. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers, Doug.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.